Good morning. You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Hannah Colton, a reporter and temporary news director here at KUNM. In 2019, Albuquerque was listed as one of the top 10 places for women in technology fields, with nearly 30% of tech jobs here filled by women. This morning, we're talking with women who work in the science and technology fields. What is the outlook for women who want to get into a tech career, whether straight out of high school or later in life? Were you encouraged to pursue STEM subjects as a student? And how did that affect your career trajectory? What can we learn about the history of women in science in New Mexico? Join the conversation by emailing letstalk@kunm.org, tweet at us with the hashtag letstalknm, or call now 277-5866. That's 277-5866. I want to welcome in the studio this morning Anna Yobet with Los Alamos National Labs, who co-founded a summer physics camp for young women at Powake High School. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here, making the drive down this morning. Anna, do you remember the moment that you decided you loved physics best?
Yes. It was thanks to my parents, in fact. They made me realize that being curious was critical. And that an example was the first, when I got my driver's license, the first thing that my dad asked me to do was to change the tire.
Oh, amazing.
For example, right? So there was this self-sufficiency and figuring things out by yourself, and you can do it, the spirit.
Cool. And was there anyone else, a mentor or teacher, who encouraged you to keep pursuing that direction?
My parents didn't have high education, so they valued very much all of us. I'm the fifth in a big family. We are 20 years apart with my brothers. They put a lot of effort in education. In my school, I went to a girls-only school. So all the teachers were women. So there was no issue about whether a girl could go into physics or chemistry or engineering. All my role models were female. So I never questioned myself until I went to college. It was a shock when I went to college and I realized the gender gap and gender bias. Until then, I was convinced I could conquer the world.
And how did you find yourself at Los Alamos?
Oh, it's something that we show in the summer physics camp, that careers are not linear paths. Sometimes we have this image that to get from A to B is just a straight path. So I was born and raised in Barcelona by chance. I ended up doing research at the university. By chance, I ended up going into an Erasmus grant to Grenoble in France. And I was offered a postdoc in Edinburgh, and then I got a phone call from Los Alamos. Would you like to come to Los Alamos to do a postdoc? We need someone in your field. So I said, okay, why not? I had never been in the U.S. So I took my Samsonite, filled it with few things, not expecting to be longer than a year and a half up here, and came to Los Alamos. And after my postdoc, I met who became my husband. And then I knock at doors saying, hey, I'm a postdoc. I want to stay here. Would you like to hire me? And I found a great mentor who hired me and believed I was worth it. And 20 years later, I'm still here.
So tell us about the physics camp.
So the summer physics camp for young women in northern New Mexico was started as a way for us to give back to the community, and in particular, I noticed that we have an amazing opportunity here in New Mexico with national labs and tech companies, and yet they have to hire people like me
from abroad. You mean?
From abroad, because we often not find this expertise locally. So I started thinking, what's happening? I volunteered for the public schools in Santa Fe for a number of years, and I noticed some gaps, right, in empowerment, inspiring, and a lot of the local students don't have role models in STEM. So how can you think that you can do something if you don't have anyone you can look up to that is working on that, or you have no idea? Mm-hmm. So I started networking with my colleagues and then talking to the principals in the local schools, figuring out how could we adapt things that have worked elsewhere to New Mexico. We realized that there were some things that were needed. For example, we offer a stipend to the students that attend for the two-week camps. And we also work very closely with the schools, making this camp in Pojoaque, which is at the crossroads between Española, Santa Fe. You know, we have students coming as far from as Las Vegas, New Mexico, Ojo Caliente, and some students from Los Alamos, homeschooled and public school students. So we needed to adapt it so we attracted all these students and we could show them that there's no one path. There are many ways to get to where you are, and inspiring grit, passion, and perseverance.
And we will put the information about the Summer Physics Camp on our website, kunm.org. And it looks like it's June 8th through 19th this year.
And the deadline for applications is April 1st. And the only eligibility requirement is that students need to have Algebra 1. And we have, like, last year we had like 90 volunteers. It's mainly volunteers. We do hands-on experiments. We taught them how to solder. We visit Los Alamos, you know, several of the Los Alamos labs, large facilities. And that's amazing when you see these students coming to the lab and meeting their uncles and getting into this, you know, place that they think is unattainable, where their uncles might be working or parents might be working. And meeting all these people that work there. So I think that transferred this passion for what we do.
And why is that stipend important? I mean, what's the sort of, what are those girls or young women up against when it comes to, like, the opportunities that they might have in the summer?
It's, New Mexico is a relatively poor state. A lot of the students qualify for free lunch. We don't want the financial strains of the family to preclude a young woman from dreaming, from being empowered, inspired, right? So this young woman in high school, so what we realized when we look did a longitudinal analysis of what was available, there are lots of programs in STEM, but when they come to high school and they are making the major decisions in their life, choosing which topics they choose at school, at that time, they are also a time that they can be working. In the summer, they could be babysitting, helping the family, have less expensive, watching their younger brothers and sisters. So by giving this stipend, we provide several things that are valuable to the family. It's not a burden to the family that their daughter attends the summer physics camp, but we're also telling them that learning and education is something that pays off.
And what kind of... it's been going for three years.
This is the fourth.
And what kind of results have you seen as far as those women getting into internships or college or,
So we started small. We just, the first year, we got an American Physical Society grant, and let's see how it works. And on our fourth year, we got a lot of endorsement by a variety of institutions, Lanal Foundation, New Mexico Consortium, Los Alamos National Lab, as well as professional society like IEEE and so on, right? So one of the requirements when you apply for grants, you are asked to demonstrate the outcome of these studies. So we have a questionnaire before and after of the camp, and we see that the perception of STEM in the student changes throughout the camp. They realize, and I have some, you know, we ask the students to write it down, right? Some say that they never thought that, you know, science could be so much fun. And they also, other things that they share is that they didn't think they were enough. And what we convey is that they are enough. And I always tell them, you know, I only know a little bit more than you in a very narrow area. I'm not better than you. I just persisted. And we also teach them things like grit and so on. So the results are that we are in touch with these women. We have seen through the students program at Los Alamos that they are asking questions about internships and so on. They are in touch with us. And we also mentor them when they apply for those jobs, making sure they find the right mentors and so on. They're also our loudspeakers. So we contact them when we have the next school. And then they are also the ones that, I think you call it word to mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word to mouth. They encourage other students. So we've seen our application rate to go up throughout New Mexico. And that's very important. From the school, one of the contributions of the Summer Physics Camp is also impacting the local schools. So we partner with teachers from public schools that participate in the camp. And what the teachers get, we have all the volunteers doing everything, but the teachers are our main educators. We scientists are out of touch. on what it is to be in a classroom, right? So that these educators are incredibly important, and what they get out of it is they get to experience all these demonstration and all these volunteers. Networking is key. Mm-hmm. And then they can bring all these volunteers to their classroom. So we've seen that, these teachers asking, you know, asking us to go to their classroom to show a specific demonstration, to talk about black holes, to talk about Higgs boson, to, you know, things like that. These are things we provide, these tools or unlimited wonder opportunity for the teachers. And then the students also get exposed to other female role models, for both for men, young men, and for young women. It's important that society changes holistically, not mm-hmm. just women, you know, try to make the change.
Right. Do you have a favorite lesson or moment during the camp?
It always warms my heart and makes me realize we are doing the right thing when I read the words from the students thanking us for doing this effort on top of our daily lives. This is not our job. We do that on top of our job because we think that's the right thing to do for New Mexico. And like comments like, thank you for doing things, for organizing the camp for girls like us. What do you mean, like us? Mm-hmm. We are all worth it.
What do they mean? Do you know?
They don't think they are capable. They don't have, they feel that they don't think that they can aspire high.
Because they come from schools that maybe don't have these opportunities or?
Schools, family, cultural education, whatever it is, so we opened this. No, you are like me. My parents didn't go to college, right? My parents couldn't help me with my homework. No, we are the same, honey. So I believe that they can relate to it. And many of the, one of the things that I insist in the volunteers is we all the women, female and male that volunteer, we all talk about our lives. And then they can relate to us as a human being. Yes, I have a PhD, but I'm a mother as well. So I think that makes them relate and it looks less sparkly and more, yes, I also have to make breakfast for my kids every morning.
277-5866 is the number to call this morning. What or who got you interested in science or technology? If you work in these fields, call in, tell us about it this morning. If you're a woman or a man or a non-binary person, the number to call in is 277-5866. You can also participate on Twitter with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. Joining us by phone this morning is Amanda Truitt, who teaches astronomy at Santa Fe Community College and coordinates the planetarium there. Good morning, Amanda.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So describe the planetarium. Like, what is it like to be in there? What do you love about that as a teaching tool?
It's really cool. It's a big, you know, full dome theater. It has about 80 seats, so it's big enough to, you know, have, you know, a good amount of people in there, but it also still feels sort of like, you know, intimate a little bit, and like that people aren't as intimidated to like ask questions and kind of participate in the discussion. It's really nice to have that, you know, as far as utilizing that for my classroom, it's really a great asset that the school has, because, you know, teaching astronomy, a lot of times, you know, people sign up for that class thinking, we're just going to, like, you know, stargaze and maybe look through some telescopes and, you know, just look at the stars and it'll be fun. But of course, you know, that's not necessarily the case. It's not always possible to do that. The classes are scheduled, you know, for the afternoon and not nighttime. So being able to go into the planetarium and, you know, make it dark and simulate the sky and be able to teach that way is really awesome, in my opinion.
Very cool. We're going to hear a little bit more about that in a minute, but we do need to go to a quick break. The number to call in this morning is 277-5866. We've got scientists, experts here from Los Alamos National Labs, from Santa Fe Community College. We'll be speaking later with some folks from Girls Who Code and CNM. Give us a call, 277-5866. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. We'll be back in a minute.
The Rothstein Donatelli Law Firm is committed to supporting KUNM, where the law firm's criminal practice can help clients petition state courts to permanently remove public records related to criminal charges and certain convictions. RothsteinLaw.com.
Support provided by Weekly Alibi, Albuquerque's news weekly and a source for local news, arts, entertainment, and culture. On stands every Thursday or at alibi.com.
Composer Sean Solomon was in New York City in 2011 when New York State recognized same-sex marriage. He turned his reflections and experiences into music. Coming up, a piece inspired by a celebration of equality. Music by Sean Solomon on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Good morning. You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Hannah Colton. Our focus today, women in tech fields in New Mexico. Are you an aspiring scientist? Did you have any mentors or teachers that helped spark your interest in science, math, or technology? We want to hear from you. Give us a call, 277-KUNM. That's 277-5866. We're also on Twitter. You can search the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. We did have a Twitter comment from Jessie. She says, love hearing about Albuquerque being a top city for women in STEM and tech. Here at the UNM Biology Department, we have tons of amazing and inspiring female undergrads, grad students, postdocs, and faculty. I love it here. And we don't have anyone from UNM this morning, but I know there's a lot of really great work going on as far as women in science here as well. Thank you, Jessie. So Amanda Truitt on the phone from Santa Fe this morning. I asked Anna a little bit ago for her sort of science origin story. Do you have one that you'd like to share? What got you set on your path?
Yeah, similar to hers. It was really my parents too. I mean, when I was really young, I loved like the ocean and sea creatures, and I really wanted to be a marine biologist, which My mom always loved that. Even from like first grade, I always said I wanted to be a marine biologist. And then as I got a little older and learned, you know, more about science, and I just kind of broadened my scope of interest a little bit. And then when I was about 13 or 14, my dad actually bought me a telescope, and it was that year, happened to be Mars's one of Mars's closest approaches to Earth in a while. And we went out on a really dark night and looked at Mars in a telescope. And I was just kind of hooked at that point. I just thought that was really cool. And then I kind of switched gears from, you know, wanting to be a marine biologist to wanting to, go to school for astrophysics. And so I did. I mean, luckily I was, you know, I was pretty encouraged from my family. They did have some, you know, reservations, like, oh, isn't that going to be hard? Or like, what are you going to do with that? You know? So that was, it was always kind of a challenge, you know, to kind of justify, you know, that decision to kind of pursue something a little, what seemed to, you know, a lot of my family is sort of esoteric, but like, ultimately, that's sort of what got me into it. And I've been, you know, pursuing that and interested in the science-based kind of like peer research, as well as, you know, science education in general since then, because I feel like it's really important. So
did you ever feel discouraged from choosing one of those fields because you didn't like fit the mold? Any negative reactions from teachers or?
Definitely. When I got to college, similar to the previous discussion also, like, I definitely felt very much more like out of place a little. I mean, even in my first semester in my physics classes, One of my professors assumed I was just like auditing the course. I was the only woman in the class. And eventually he actually ended up really liking me because I kind of felt like I had to go above and beyond to like prove myself, to like, you know, do really well on the test and like outdo all of the guys because I felt like, you know, I had to. So in a way, you know, I realized that, you know, I was working maybe harder than some of my colleagues in the class. And I did feel very, you know, like I need to prove that I belong here. Like it wasn't just like, oh, I'm just going to take a class and sit there and like, you know, absorb this information and do well. It was like kind of a personal challenge because of how I felt, at least that it was perceived that I was there at all. And ultimately, like I made a lot of good friends, you know, in the program and the department, and people, you know, ended up being encouraging, and that was, it was a good thing. But definitely at the beginning, it was very jarring, you know, to come in and be like one of the only women in the program and the only women in some of my specific classes. And, you know, just feeling like, not even necessarily that they didn't want me there, but just that it was odd that I was there. Like I was like a unique zoo animal to be like, you know, studied and like, oh, that's interesting that she chose this path. Like, you know, not that like, you know, none of the men that were in the program were ever, you know, studied or scrutinized like that. They were just accepted. It was like, oh yeah, okay, you're doing physics, great, you know. So definitely that was something that I faced in college. Less so in grad school when I went, you know, for my PhD. I feel like by that point, you know, it was a little bit more balanced. There were a lot more women, you know, in my incoming year, but I've definitely experienced that sort of like feeling out of place.
And in the studio here, we have Anna Yobet, and you were nodding just now when Amanda was talking about sort of experiencing that differential treatment. Did you want to add anything?
I think if you talk to 100 women or 1,000 women, there are many common denominators. And what we have just heard is the common denominator. In depending where you live, the cultural thing that you just heard from Amanda about the family questioning, I think in certain areas like New Mexico, because of our culture and history and traditions, young women are questioned more if they want to go to engineering fields with, you know, rather than in medical field. So that's another thing that as a community we need to kind of explain or help. That, you know, it's okay and it's fun. We are not oddities. We are not strange. And that's why seeing role models in their schools, more volunteers and so on, can help that. Because local women have to fight not only, you know, oh, isn't going to be too hard, kind of discouraging, making you think that you're not going to be able to make it, but also the cultural thing of, well, if you go to college, you will never come back to New Mexico kind of thing. Or you know, this role, cultural role as a caregiver. So I went through the same thing in college. One of the professors came, and I still remember, you know, 30 years later, right, and asking us if the girls were there. You know, he came to the classroom and says, are you all here for fluid mechanics? And we were all like, yes. The girls, too, was like, of course, what's your problem? Mm-hmm. And then I knew that I had to, like Amanda said, I had to, you know, work really hard because it was going to be an uphill. But that builds character, too.
Mm. Our phone lines are open this morning, 277-5866. I want to take a call. Mia in Tijeras. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning.
What would you like to add?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
By the way, it's Mia Maya.
Okay.
Sorry.
Mia Maya.
No, it's okay. No, I'm calling because, you know, I was just really moved and inspired by the guest that's on the air today. I just feel like it's super important for females to kind of get into the science world. I myself am a clinical lab scientist at Chris of St. Vincent's Hospital in Santa Fe. And I work with a lot of women, and they contribute immensely to our work and our work effort to, you know, get patients results so that physicians can properly treat patients. And I was just very inspired. I'm an African-American male, and I have three beautiful daughters. And every single day I wake up and they wake up together. We all wake up, and I ask them, what are they going to do, you know, with their life? And they always say, you know, ballerina, or, you know, cause my daughters are young. One of them can't speak yet. She's 4 months, and the other one is 2 years, and the other one is 4 years. And every single day I wake up, I ask them what they're going to do. And the oldest is always a doctor, and the youngest one always follows suit and says she's going to be a doctor too. But I'm just, you know, taken aback by the fact that it doesn't make a lot of sense that a field like science would be lopsided in the sense that there's a monoculture when science itself is very diverse, and the science requires a diverse set of people to contribute to things, something so colorful as science. And so, yeah, I just wanted to contribute that in the sense that I feel like women do play an immense role in the science world, especially when it comes to the clinical laboratories, where if people don't get the results, they die. And that's imperative. We give physicians and nurses their jobs essentially by putting out results. And it's a very scientific approach with application of the, we basically apply the science that has been established. So
thank you so much for that, Miamaya. I appreciate you calling in, and I appreciate your work as a doctor and as a father empowering your young girls. That's really good to hear about. If you want to join in the conversation this morning, you can call 277-5866. If you work in a science or technical field, what's the gender disparity like in your workplace? Do you feel like things are getting more equal, or is there still a long way to go? Let us know. 277-5866. You can also tweet the hashtag #LetsTalkNM, and our producer will get your comment to me on the air. Excuse me. Amanda, I wanted to ask you to respond to something that Miamaya said, which is the idea that science is so diverse, and if, you know, if women aren't allowed or aren't encouraged in that direction, that we'll lose out on a lot of good ideas and good good contributions. What do you think? What's your experience with that?
I totally agree. Yeah, I think you know, the broader you know, spectrum of people that we can get involved in science and technology is for the better, just because, you know, more diverse perspectives always influence development and change, I think, in more impactful ways than if you're just in an echo chamber, you know, of like-minded people, of people from the same backgrounds, from the same, you know, gender potentially. I think that, you know, it's not even necessarily like a malicious thing or thing that's done, you know, consciously. It's just that, you know, if that's just what you've always experienced, you just accept it as the reality, and you don't really even know you're missing those different perspectives. And then when you're kind of brought to a point where you're introduced to maybe someone with a different background, or someone, you know, who comes at a problem from a different angle than you would have even ever considered, you know, I feel like that only makes us stronger, you know, together. And I feel like it's important to embrace, you know, those different perspectives for sure.
Mm-hmm. Also on the phone this morning, we have Andrea Cisneros-Wichman, Program Director of Deep Dive Coding with CNM's Ingenuity. Good morning, Andrea.
Good morning, Hannah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. Can you tell us about the Deep Dive Coding program?
Of course, yeah. So we offer 10 to 12 week boot camps, which help individuals change careers very quickly. 5 current boot camps, including training in web development, Java and Android software development, digital media, data science, and an Internet of Things boot camp. These programs help individuals change careers very quickly, which is appealing to many people, but including women who are looking to improve their lives without spending years going back to college to prepare for a new career. And we don't just teach tech skills. We have what we call the deep dive approach, and that approach is to provide personal and professional development along the way while giving our students the support and resources they need to ensure their success. So it's very high touch and high tech, and that high touch support really keeps our completion rate above 93% with a career outcome satisfaction rate of 85%.
And how is that model unique? I mean, you mentioned it's a quick turnaround for people who want to get that that training quick, but how do you sort of meet that demand or stay nimble in that way?
Yeah, we stay nimble in a variety of ways. For example, the data science and Internet of Things boot camps that I just mentioned are brand new, but based on needs from local industry partners who have told us these are the skills that they'll be looking for in the future. We also satisfy the needs of our students by looking for partners who can support them in their success. For example, over the last 5 years, we've had significant grant-funded support from the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, who focuses on supporting low-income persons of color in Bernalillo County through training in our technology and entrepreneurship programs. While that grant hasn't focused solely on women, it has provided resources that has allowed many women to take our boot camps when otherwise it would not have been possible. So we're always looking for partners who can help provide assistance with not just tuition, but laptops, childcare, transportation, tutors, everything that it takes to really help make sure that our participants succeed.
And Andrea, when we spoke before, you said every company is a tech company. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, if they don't know it already, all industries are starting to realize that they need more technologists. For example, one of our best employer partners is the New Mexico District Attorney's Office, who has hired multiple deep dive coding graduates to work on software development projects. One of them built an app that police can use to track people who have warrants. They've hired people who work in digital media roles that are used to enhance the way attorneys present their cases. It's just one of many examples of jobs that our graduates are getting with companies that aren't seen as tech companies.
And how is the job market changing to be more friendly to, like, anyone who wants to put to use their tech skills? I mean, we heard there was a study saying that Albuquerque is now number 6 as far as best places for women in tech. Does that sort of track with what you're seeing?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that I see changing is a lot of companies now are not requiring traditional degrees to work in technology, and I think a lot of that has to do with the success we've shown through the boot camps, and that in just 10 or 12 weeks, people can become software developers, even if they didn't have a degree or any formal education in that before this. We're also seeing a lot of people freelancing, starting companies, and working for technology startups. It was great to see Albuquerque listed as a top city for women in technology, but it's also often listed as a top city for entrepreneurs, and that's an area that we continue to see grow as well.
And what about areas that are more rural in New Mexico? I mean, there must be more of an uphill battle for women who want to get those skill sets or get that training. Do you have any outreach to those areas?
Sure, we try. It is a challenge because our boot camps are here in Albuquerque. But we do often see people travel. In fact, we get a lot of participants from out of state and from other parts of the state because coding boot camps around the country are very expensive, and here they're not so much. And again, we have many partners who help us support the tuition anyway. So people can come stay in Albuquerque for 10 or 12 weeks and take our boot camps, and they often do. Sometimes they go back to their communities and find jobs there. Often they end up staying in Albuquerque.
What are you seeing as far as job markets? What makes Albuquerque such a hub for women in technical fields? If you live in the Albuquerque metro area or elsewhere in the state, what are options that you see for girls and young women to get this kind of training? Give us a call this morning. It's 277-5866. You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm your host, Hannah Colton, and we're going to a quick break. We'll be back in a minute.
Jesse Wente is a Canadian broadcaster, activist, and film buff. When he's not critiquing pop culture, he's outspoken on policy decisions that affect Indigenous people. He raised eyebrows by saying his country's attempt to reconcile the colonization of Indigenous people is dead. Jesse Wente is our Native in the Spotlight on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
It's the season of love. If you love KUNM and couldn't imagine life in New Mexico without it, now is a good time to support what you love by donating that unwanted car or truck. Maybe you're no longer driving it, or maybe you just need more room in your driveway. Either way, donating it to KUNM is a great way to show your love. To find out if your vehicle qualifies, call 888-KUNM. Car. That's 888-586-6227.
Good morning. You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM 89.9 FM. I'm your host, Hannah Colton. This morning, we're talking about women in science and technology in New Mexico. What makes it hard to break into those fields as a woman or non-binary person? What kinds of opportunities help close the opportunity gap? Join the conversation. If you're outside the Albuquerque metro area, you can call 1-877-899-5866. You can also email us anytime, letstalk@kunm.org. We got a Twitter comment from Jill. She says, in my field of aerospace engineering, women fill only 14% of the jobs. I'm also an Air Force veteran and have spent my entire life dealing with gender disparity and discrimination. I'm also a pilot, and only 6% of all pilots are female. Thanks for that comment, Jill. And on the phone is Andrea Cisneros-Wichman, Program Director of Deep Dive Coding at CNM. And how do you coach young women about things like dealing with discrimination in the workplace?
Sure. So that's always a concern for women, especially if they're taking the risk to change careers and quit their jobs to do one of our boot camps, which they often do. But if women come to me and ask my advice about whether they'll get a job after the boot camp, I tell them that the odds lately actually seem better than they are for men. Companies are intentionally trying to diversify. So I see women getting hired out of our boot camps really, really quickly.
And how do you talk to people about overcoming things like stigma and imposter syndrome?
Yeah, so we have a very collaborative community of alumni and graduates and community members who come and talk to our students about these topics. And it's hard if you've only been a web developer for 10 weeks to go out and say, I'm a web developer. But that's part of the personal and professional development that we provide our students. One of our alumni in particular comes and does a great talk on imposter syndrome and how she overcame that. And we always bring back a lot of our alumni to come talk about their experiences and to be role models. And I think that's really what's so unique and important about our community here is that it is so supportive and collaborative. And we do have people who support each other all the time and lift each other up, which is just so great. And I see it every day.
Amanda Truitt, astronomy teacher at Santa Fe Community College. I wanted to ask you about this, too. How do you talk to your students about like stereotypes and gendered expectations in the workplace or in school?
Well, a lot of times, you know, I'm not necessarily talking directly about it. I feel like, however, you know, being there, just sort of showing them that I'm there and I've had a lot of, you know, different experiences, and I chose, you know, to teach at the community college, you know, like after kind of a different career trajectory, you know, I feel like being there in of itself is sort of like a good way for them to see, you know, a woman in science mm-hmm. who's done different things. But, you know, a few a few of my students, you know, will, especially, you know, the women in my classes, you know, will come and say, like, you know, I think it's really great that you're here. Like, I appreciate you being here and, like, you know, doing this for us. Like, especially, I feel like astronomy is something that a lot of people have expressed as, like, sort of a childhood interest, and, you know, they kind of lose that as they get older and kind of deal with, like, the reality of the world, and it's not something they ever thought, you know, they could learn about. Like, it wasn't useful enough. Like, it wasn't a tangible, you know, useful skill, so they didn't really, like, pursue it. And now, you know, that they're taking the class, they just express, you know, gratitude that they're able to do that and see someone, you know, like them who they can talk to about it. So, you know, I talk with some students personally about that, but I don't often really get into that kind of discussion, like, with the class as a whole. I mean, maybe I should, but I feel like I'm representing, you know, some diversity in science and STEM by just being there and showing them that, you know, math and science doesn't have to be intimidating. It can be fun. It has, like, real applications. It's not just this abstract, untouchable thing that they can't do. And by showing them that, you know, I can do it, and so they can do it. And, you know, I feel like that empowers them too. So,
absolutely. I want to bring into the conversation Samantha Andrews, a software engineer and a facilitator with the Girls Who Code Club. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning.
So when did you decide you wanted to work with software and computer science?
Yeah, so my background in getting into tech is a little bit different than what the previous people on the line have said. And I think that it's cool to have a diverse set of, you know, just interests represented. So I actually didn't get into tech until I had already graduated from UNM with a bachelor's degree in a non-technical field. So I got a degree in communication, but I had done a lot of graphic design work ever since I was pretty young. And eventually that graphic design passion sort of turned into a let's try, you know, writing software. So I was 25 when I started the deep dive boot camp with Andrea, who you just talked to. I did the full stack web development boot camp, and my design skills really paired well with front end web development. And that's what I do now. I'm a front end designer and software engineer at Descartes Labs.
And I wanted to ask, I mean, we've heard a little bit this morning about how discrimination and stereotypes happen in the workplace. How do you think young women and girls who are getting into math and science have it better now than, like, we did or than our mothers did back in school?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are, in general, a lot more opportunities and encouragement. People are just more aware of what to or to say or to not to say. I'd like to think that, at least. But I do think that there are a lot more programs specifically geared toward girls and women who want to get into technology, and programs like that make all the difference.
There's still time to call in this morning. That number is 277-5866. And Sam, so you work with girls in these clubs, Girls Who Code. What do you like about that work? I mean, what sort of, like, makes it sparkly or hopeful for you?
Yeah, Girls Who Code, I mean, it ends up being, like, the most inspirational, best part of my week. We host weekly clubs for girls who are in both middle school and high school. And the girls that that come to our clubs are just so smart, so silly, so creative. And every week they inspire me. I'm there to facilitate these clubs, but it ends up being me who leaves inspired and just excited about all the work that they're doing. Even though they're young, they're just incredible.
And what kinds of challenges do they kind of bring to you? Like, I'm sure you end up being a mentor and sort of coaching them in how to just get to where they want to be. I mean, what sorts of stories are you hearing?
Yeah, totally. So Girls Who Code is the clubs that we teach. So Girls Who Code is a national organization, and then we have clubs or chapters here in Albuquerque and other clubs in, I believe, in Santa Fe. But we try to make our clubs a really safe space for girls to learn computer programming from people who look like them. So mentors, facilitators who are women in computer programming fields, who are professionals, are all the facilitators teaching these clubs. But we really try to focus on building this community and sisterhood for girls, building a classroom that is a safe space where everyone is encouraged to make mistakes. So we have a phrase that we use called brave, not perfect, where we create an environment where students are encouraged to break the code. You're encouraged to find the bugs that are written in the code. And after that, you know, it's an opportunity to teach debugging techniques. So we're able to come in as facilitators and say, okay, so the code broke. There's nothing, you know, we're not going to get upset at you for that. But here are some techniques to debug it on your own. And one of those debugging techniques is always asking other students in the classroom for help on how to fix their code. So I think it just, the club in general is focused on obviously building these fundamentals in computer programming, but also on this building community and sisterhood and leaning on each other and trusting yourself. I think that's the biggest thing we try to instill in these girls is just trust yourself, that you have all the answers. And if you don't, there's here all these resources for you to ask for help or to go and explore and figure it out.
And it strikes me that maybe like that culture that you're building, like sisterhood and collaboration and community, like that sounds pretty different than, say, a high school physics class where you're competing with other students to get the grade. Like, do you find that as an interesting contrast?
Totally, totally. I think that's what makes the clubs really special is these are all after school, outside of the classroom clubs. They're free, and we don't want it to be boring. We don't want anyone to be worried about getting a good grade. We want the girls to work on projects that excite them and to make things that where they get to express their creativity. I'm always encouraging the girls to incorporate their art into their computer programs or their other things that they're interested in. A lot of the girls are really interested in anime. I encourage them to bring all of that to our club, basically bringing your whole self to the club, and it's not a place where you're competing with anyone else.
What kinds of dreams or goals do your students have with their coding work? Like, do you see some beautiful websites coming out?
Oh, yeah. We do a lot of kind of talking about, like, what do you want to do? You know, what do you want to do with, what kind of programs do you want to write in the future, or what do you want to write in this class? And there have just been some of the wildest answers. You know, I want to build robots that, you know, do X, Y, and Z. They have so many amazing ideas, and the things they're making in these clubs are all really incredible. It's one of those things where, you know, even just from learning the basics, you can empower these students to go on and learn more on their own and create awesome stuff in their free time.
We do have one more listener call. Good morning. You are on the line. Want to introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Melissa. I'm calling from Albuquerque. And I really appreciate hearing all of the efforts that are you all are doing to get more girls and women into these fields. And I really, I think that effort needs to go all the way through the workplaces. I have a good friend who is a physicist, has her doctorate in physics, and came here and worked in one of the labs, and loves her work and loves the state, but ultimately ended up leaving the state because where she worked, she was simply always sort of frozen out and not able to really, she wasn't given the same kinds of opportunities to carry out the projects that she wanted that her male colleagues were. And I just think that's so sad for our state.
And we know that pay disparities remain too. Melissa, thank you so much for your call. And I wanted to put that to Anna here in the studio from Los Alamos. Do you know anything about the disparities or how the gaps may be closing at the national labs when it comes to pay? Do you have any numbers on that?
No.
Okay. I think I saw in that report that the pay equity was reaching like 95% in New Mexico, but I'm sure that's not the same across the board. Melissa, thanks so much for your call. I do want to get to a little bit of a history lesson. So I'm sure you're all familiar with the 2016 film Hidden Figures. That was about Katherine Johnson, Dorothy Vaughan, and Mary Jackson, three African-American women who were kind of the brains behind the early the human computers, right, behind the early days of the U.S. space program at NASA. I did a little research last night, and I wanted to introduce us to just a few of New Mexico's hidden figures. These are women who worked on the Manhattan Project, building the bomb at Los Alamos. And any of our guests, do jump in here if you know any of these names and want to add something. I'll just mention three, although there are many. So in 1942, Elizabeth Riddle Graves was recruited along with her husband from the University of Chicago, where she got her doctorate in nuclear physics. And she helped figure out the role of neutrons and how to control them in the nuclear reactor. According to the Los Alamos publication, Women of the Secret City, Elizabeth was actually pregnant during the first experimental test, the Trinity test. So she and her husband stayed at a cabin in Carrizozo, 50 miles from the test site, to observe and measure the sort of aftermath. And they monitored the spread of radiation and the ground shock. Physicist Elda Anderson is credited with preparing the first sample of nearly pure uranium-235 acquired by Los Alamos for experimentation. And a woman named, I think I have it wrong here, but I believe her name is Floy Agnes Naranjo, a member of Santa Clara Pueblo, was recruited in 1945 to work in the hematology lab at the Manhattan Project. So she was studying the effects of radiation on the blood, and she had a long career in various national labs after that and lived a long life, died in 2018. Do you have anything to add, Anna, about those women?
Not about those women specifically, but going back to some of the callers said, let's make sure we inspire our daughters by showing them all these, you know, women. Sometimes it's hard to find their stories, but they are there.
They are.
So there are books about women that, you know, make contributions to science. And for young kids, in particular, they need to see those role models. So, again, I think that it's great that you brought those up. There are many, many more. If you think about the JPL labs and so on, we can learn from the history of how these women educated themselves, organized themselves, and empowered other women. And that's the same thing that I believe we all are trying to do. Educate ourselves. We cannot change the past. We cannot change the issues that you mentioned about discrimination. We can educate ourselves, educate our colleagues. So we make change bottoms up while we, you know, the leaderships are changing in the higher levels. We see more women in the national stage, but we can do the same bottoms up.
And those resources, including some oral histories with some of those women from Los Alamos, are on our website, KUNM.org. You can find the show page. And there's a great photo of another woman. I believe her name is Jane Harden from Los Alamos on our page, too. We are out of time. Thank you so much to our guests, Samantha Andrews, Anna Yobet, Amanda Truitt, and Andrea Cisneros-Wichman. And a big shout out to friend of the show, Maria Erin Jones, for the idea for today's topic for Women's History Month. Thank you to everyone who called in this morning. And as always, the conversation doesn't have to end here. You can comment on our Facebook page, tag us on Twitter with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM, or email us letstalk@kunm.org. If you missed any part of today's show, you can listen on kunm.org or subscribe to our podcast via iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. Next time on Let's Talk New Mexico, host Khalil Ekulona will take us into the world of sports gambling. That's next Thursday morning at 8. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Bryce Dix screened your calls, and today's producer was Ty Bannerman. I'm Hannah Colton. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM.